You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
One of the most common reasons why dogs are relinquished to an animal shelter is unacceptable behavior, and those can be the lucky ones. Too many dogs are banished from the home to the backyard, never to enjoy the company of the people who had hoped they had found the perfect addition to the family. Others are dumped along a roadway to fend for themselves. And then there are those that are abused and die a horrid death. What can we do as caregivers to ensure that our pets are well-mannered? How do we know if a behavioral issue has a psychological or a medical basis? Do we need a psychiatrist, or do we need to consider such a question? Is there doggy Prozac? My guest today is Dr. Stephanie Schwartz. Dr. Schwartz is a board-certified veterinary behaviorist and will answer some of the most common questions pertaining to achieving that outstanding canine comportment. We'll be right back after this break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Buster, you're telling me my dog food products can't go on your shelves?
That's right. Didn't pass one of my Petco certified nutrition checklists. Sorry, Wayne.
Who made these checklists?
Geniuses. Very smart guys.
Well, it's good enough for most grocery stores.
Do you see cheese puffs on my shelves? Mayonnaise? Soda pop?
No.
That's because I ain't running no grocery store, Wayne. Your pets will get better nutrition, I guarantee it. Petco, where healthy pets go.
Enter the code DR10, DOCTOR, the number 10, and get 10% off any order. No minimum at Petco.com.
I play tennis because I love to. But inside, I want to win. Take away the court, the net. I might not be a player, but I'll always be a competitor. Lady Foot Locker understands that.
Lady Foot Locker, the first to carry Adidas off-court shoes and the gear that goes with them.
If you play your best, there's no regret.
Lady Foot Locker, one place, every woman.
Go to LadyFootLocker.com and enter the code AFDOC1LF to get 10% off any order of $50 or more. Or enter the code AFDOC2LF to get 15% off any order of $75 or more at LadyFootLocker.com.
Like your business to reach out and invite in our audience. We have a brand new trademark concept called Info Seeds. Info Seeds are short 20-second seeds of information about your place of business, practice, or service. Is the best, most cost-effective way to invite us in. We only have a limited number of slots left. For more information, visit the website
PetLifeRadio.com.
Click on sponsorship information. There you can listen to a sample of Info Seed. Remember, only a limited number of opportunities are available.
This year, Americans are expected to spend a jaw-dropping $36 billion on their pets. From lighted leashes to high-end spa products, the discriminating pet owner can find just about anything to pamper his or her pet. Hi, this is Michelle Fern. Join me every week for Best Bets for Pets, where we'll talk about the latest pet products and talk to the companies that make them. Best Bets for Pets, every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Schwartz, thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure. It's fun to be back.
Good. One of the questions, people will say they'll bring in a rescue dog, for instance, a dog they got from the shelter or one that someone gave them. And they'll too often say, oh, it was abused as a puppy. Do you really think that this is a real excuse, a real reason why some of these dogs have behaviors that are unacceptable and there's nothing that we can do? Or is there always something that we can do?
There's almost always something that we can do. The question, though, is, can we ever really find out if that dog was abused? I think it's probably overdiagnosed as far as being the cause of a behavior problem, but I also think that it's underreported. I think that people abuse their pets and we never know about it. I think that there, regrettably, are some veterinarians who suspect it and never report it to the authorities. And so the answer to your question is, are some of these pets from shelters abused? There's probably a chance of that, but we'll never know because that dog will never be able to tell us unless there are obvious fractures or some horrible injury that couldn't have resulted from anything else. We'll never really know. Some pets are head shy. So, for example, they'll back away if a hand is lifted towards them or if somebody makes a somewhat sudden motion in their direction. Does that mean that they were abused, or does it simply mean that they are being hypervigilant in a new environment? Or are they simply a little bit nervous because they're scared of everything that's around them, including the new people? It's hard to say if it was due to abuse, and it almost doesn't matter. Because when you do acquire a pet from a shelter, you're starting fresh. Everybody has a fresh chance. And that's the wonderful thing about getting a shelter pet.
And I'm glad you brought that up. And I really would like to focus, if we can, in this particular segment on getting that pet from a shelter or a rescue, not necessarily the puppy, because I think there's so many people that have talked about, okay, how do you socialize that puppy? But now you're bringing in this older pet who has some of its behaviors maybe already set in his little brain. What should a person do when they bring home that rescue dog to try and ensure that it's going to have that appropriate bonding, the appropriate behaviors that you want?
Let's first give kudos to the folks at the pet shelters around the country who do such a wonderful, brave, courageous, heartbreaking job every day. One of the things that they're required to do is temperament test pets that come in to see if they are adoptable. Now, obviously, if it's a no-kill shelter, they're not going to be paying attention to behaviors too much. But for the most part, most shelter folks are required to do some form of temperament testing so that they'll have an idea how to best place that pet in its new forever home. I think that once they've done that, they're already going to be able to tell the prospective adopters what to expect and what that pet is going to need most. And most of these shelter employees have received some basic training in dog behavior or cat behavior, have their own experiences with pets, and they can be very helpful. That it's not foolproof, but it still gives prospective owners a fair chance at being the right one for that pet. They'll already know if there's another pet at home, and they can give you tips. But let's talk about how to do that for a dog. The best way to introduce a new dog to the resident dog is anywhere but the home. If you bring a dog into the middle of your living room and say, here you go, have a nice friendship, and we're going to be together for the rest of our lives, you're setting everybody up for failure. If we think about the ancestral wolf, it would not have been normal or wise for any lone wolf to wander into another wolf's pack territory and expect to live. If we put that out there and think about what we do to our dogs every day, and just bring any old dog in for a play date into your living room, is just not a good idea. So it's always better to introduce them on a place where they will both behave more neutrally and not have to deal with issues of territory or pack defense. just in a play area, an open field, a dog park. Take them for a walk around the shelter. Introduce them in a place that is neutral as much as possible, without threats, without too much activity or too many other pets, and just let them get to know each other gradually as much as possible.
Is it a good idea to take your resident dog, for instance, to a shelter or a rescue person's home to say, okay, here, Fluffy, my resident dog, I'll let you choose who your new buddy is going to be? Does that work?
It can sometimes be very helpful. That doesn't mean that we're going to walk our dog up and down the cage row, you know, in the kennel area. But if you can first have a few possibilities sort of pre-selected, and then ask the shelter people to let the dog out into the visitor room or into the play area outside and see how they interact there, that's probably a nice way to see if they have a chance of being friends.
So here you have the dog that says, I like this one, if you have that opportunity to do it, and they've introduced themselves to each other and go, okay, this might work out. So many times when people bring home that new pet, there's toys that they'll sometimes scuffle over, or you come home and you're trying to give that new one all this extra attention and extra loving, and people come over and want to meet this new one and make a big fuss over it. It seems to get the resident dog's nose sometimes a little tweaked. What should they do? Should they say, oh, gee, that is your toy and you need to share? Or how should a new pet owner of two dogs break up this hierarchy, or should they establish hierarchy between them?
You've actually asked a whole bunch of questions.
Yeah, sorry about
in
that.
One. So let me try and dissect that for you. I think whenever you introduce a new person or a new pet into your life, there's going to be a honeymoon period where everybody's on their best manners, so to speak, and not doing anything too off the charts, just kind of feeling each other out and getting comfortable with the situation, with the context. The same is true of any new pet that you bring into your home. There may be a period of several weeks, maybe even several months, where everything looks honky-dory and peachy keen and everybody's in love. But inevitably, sometimes sooner than later, there's going to be a challenge that's put up by somebody, whether it's the resident pet or the newcomer, because dominance hierarchies need to be established. I think one of the best things to do is try and get a sense of who's going to be the more likely candidate of winning a dominance struggle between two dogs, the new one and the old and the resident one. So the most important thing with that is that there's no reason to feel that the resident pet deserves to be the dominant one over the newcomer. And if you expect the newcomer to behave submissively forevermore to your dominant resident dog, it doesn't mean that's going to happen. They need to work out their own relationship. And dominance hierarchies are dynamic and have to evolve with age, with health, with the individuals present. If you are acquiring a new pet, for example, and your resident dog is 10 years old and has hip dysplasia, and you're acquiring a one-year-old bouncing male, we can't expect that older female to be the top dog. The best thing to do is to try and size up who those individuals are now, and declare one to be the dominant dog from the get-go and move forward with that plan, understanding that it may need to change. You may need to reassign dominant status over time, depending on how they evolve over time themselves.
So, Dr. Schwartz, it's not going to be psychologically damaging to that older female that you're talking about to say, wait a minute, you lost your status as top dog to this new little upstart?
No, and it may be more damaging if we don't. If we set her up to continue to be the top dog, the dominant dog between those two dogs, the new and the resident one, and she has no right to be, then we're setting her up to be physically injured in a dog fight. There's no democracy in dogs, and it's not about you have seniority and you deserve the perks because you've been here longer. It doesn't work that way. It's about who's on top and who isn't, and the one who is on top gets the perks. So we can't go by democratic rules. It's got to be by social status and who deserves to be the top dog and who doesn't. By declaring one dominant over the other from the beginning, we're going to create a whole less, a whole lot less ambiguity in the relationship and a lot less stress between them as a result.
To somewhat change this, okay, we're talking about two dogs. How about if you have a cat and you're bringing in a new dog or you're bringing in a new cat? Between the two species, should you say cats rule, dogs drool, and the kitty is going to be considered the dominant one just for sake of if there's altercations when you're not home so the cat doesn't get injured?
You know, sometimes cats drool too, and dogs rule. And it's really a question of the mix of the individuals you have. Some cats are going to want to hold on to their dominance and territorial imperative over the dog. But some dogs are just not going to take that. It can be a question of size, but not necessarily. It's often a question of ambition and determination. I think that it's more important to first think about, when we're talking about cats mixed with dogs, everybody's safety. Everybody thinks that you know, the new dog's eyes are going to get scratched out by this cat who's going to be flinging itself on the dog's head. But that doesn't really happen most of the time. Most of the time, the cat is at far greater risk physically from a dog attack than vice versa. And that's what we need to think about. I think that if we have a cat who has never seen a dog before, we should understand that and be sensitive to the cat's panic attack, which is probably inevitable. And we can help that cat by bringing the dog in on a leash and limiting its range of motion for the first few weeks so that they can get used to each other without having one chase the other and start off on the wrong paw, so to speak. So I think the image of a dog getting his eyes scratched out by the cat might happen if that dog is allowed to pursue the cat and the cat is unable to get away. Is that cat geriatric? Does it have a heart condition? Is there no place for it to hide in the apartment or the home? Is the dog just too fast so the cat can't get away? There are a lot of reasons, I think, why we need to keep the cat's claws trimmed to prevent injury to anybody, but more often than not, the dog is going to do more damage to a cat than vice versa.
Excellent ideas. We're listening right now to Dr. Stephanie Schwartz give us some marvelous information on dogs and how we introduce dogs together, getting them from the shelter and introducing them to cats. Well, Dr. Schwartz, I'd love to have you stay after this short break and talk about some of the common behavioral issues that people bring to you with regard to dogs and what people can do to try and prevent them and treat them. We'll be right back after the short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Love your pets but wish their medications were a lot less expensive? They are at 1-800-PETMEDS. You'll not only save on flea and heartworm medications, but on prescriptions for arthritis, incontinence, thyroid, and more. And you get fast service, free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, our licensed pharmacists ensure accuracy, monitor drug interaction, and more. See why over 5 million people have trusted their pet's health to 1-800-PETMEDS, America's largest pet pharmacy. Call now or order online.
Go to PetMeds.com/doctor, D-O-C-T-O-R, to get 10% off any order and free shipping on orders of $39 or more at PetMeds.com.
Whether they're big, small, hairy, or whatever, you're going to need gear for your feet.
And Kids Foot Locker's got all the great shoes and gear that'll get you in the game.
Go to kidsfootlocker.com. Enter the code AFDOC1KF to get 10% off any order of $50 or more. Or enter the code AFDOC2KF to get 15% off any order of $75 or more at kidsfootlocker.com.
And cover those funky feet.
FTD's network of over 40,000 florists around the world have been creating beautiful handcrafted arrangements for 100 years. Each arrangement is delivered the same day and backed by FTD's 7-day satisfaction guarantee. For a century, people have trusted their most important occasions to the flower experts at FTD.
Since Pet Life Radio is all about puppy dogs and flowers, our listeners, that's you, can get a 20% discount on your order. Just go to florop.com and use the code DR20 at checkout. FLEUROP.com, code word DOCTOR and the number 20.
Hi, everybody. I'm Megan Blake here with my sidekick, Super Smiley. The giant mutt and spokes dog for throwaways. You're listening to Pet Life Radio, and I'd like to tell you about our brand new show, A Super Smiley Adventure. Our show explores adventures with animals. They can be traveling, out in the world trips, or inner journeys where our animals lead us to inspiration and self-discovery, or just plain fun adventures. Join us here on Pet Life Radio on A Super Smiley Adventure. Good boy.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Stephanie Schwartz, I'm learning so much from you. I really appreciate you being on the show today. With regard to your practice and it being so specialized, what are some of the most common problems that are brought to you?
The most common problems, without a doubt, are aggression, problems of aggression. And there are so many different kinds. We could talk about types of aggression probably for a year or more, but we don't have time to do that. But there's no question that that is the most common complaint, in part because it's the most powerful motivator to get folks to seek help. There are other problems, of course, and they include house soiling and destructiveness, and those are also powerful motivators, but aggression is certainly the leader by far.
So if you have a dog that is, for instance, walking with a client, and they'll oftentimes bring this to my attention, they're walking with their dog. It's that perfect little dog. They love it. It gets along well with everyone at home. But on the walk, it sees another dog across the street, and it becomes the Cujo dog. It wants to eat it. And, of course, it's usually the little Chihuahua that wants to eat the Great Dane. What can people do to either prevent this from happening, or once it starts to happen, how can they address it?
When we're dealing with that problem, let's first give a list of what the possible diagnoses are. Okay, so the presenting complaint that you've given me is as a dog who goes ballistic when it sees another dog during a walk.
Right.
So the possibility as far as the list of diagnoses includes pack defensive aggression, so protection of the owner from an intruder, the enemy dog, territorial aggression, defense of the territory. This is my neighborhood. Get out. The third one could be fear aggression. I'm scared of you. Stay away from me. I'm going to make myself look really brave, but inside, I just want to run. But I can't because I'm on a leash, so I have to make it look really good, okay? And then the fourth possibility would be a dog who is not socialized to other dogs. And that kind of falls into the fear aggression part, but it's a little bit of a distinct diagnosis. The thing is, we could have all of those things coexisting at the exact same moment in that same dog. There is no reason in the world that we can't have more than one type of aggression ballooning to the surface in that same moment. So that dog could be terrified, could be territorial, and could be defending its owner. How do we prevent that from happening? Well, maybe not get a dog. That's what dogs do. Dogs defend their territory and defend their packs and can get scared like anybody. But I think that the most important thing that we really can do is get the dog obedience training. And that doesn't mean that you have to go to a Schutzhund level 3 attack training dog to get a responsive pet. It certainly doesn't mean that you send your dog away for training, because I would never recommend that, except for very specific circumstances. And even then, I'm not sure I like the idea. And those might include someone who wants to have their dog trained for hunting, for example. And even then, as I mentioned, I still think they should be there with the dog. Obedience training should start as soon as you get your pet. Whether it's an 8-week-old puppy or an 8-year-old dog, start training from the moment you get them. And you can do that at home. You don't need to go to any kind of fancy, expensive class or get private training. You can teach your dog to sit and down very easily. Come should always be fun. Stay, take some practice, and heel is a great thing to teach your dog, because that puts them in a place that where they feel secure and confident in your leadership. The heel command puts the dog on the left side in general, close to your leg, head in line with your knee, unless it's bigger or smaller than your knee, and that puts you firmly in control of the dog. It tells the dog where to be, not what to do. The 5 basic commands are the best way to communicate to your dog for its lifetime exactly how you expect it to behave in any given circumstance.
It sounds as though this just makes such common sense, and that by working on some of these real basics every day, I always tell people that nothing in life should be free for your dog. So no matter what you want it to do, get it used to, for instance, working for you. So making it sit. It wants to eat, sit first. It wants to go outside, sit first. It wants to interact with you, sit first. So you position yourself as the leader of the pack. So you have this dog who you have all these possibilities of why it might be aggressive on that leash when it's going on a walk with you. Now what can they do when they're out on that walk? Some people will say, well, you get a choke chain and you know, you just really jerk it and get their attention that way. I have a feeling that's not what you feel is appropriate.
Well, before we even answer, you know, the question about what kind of collar you should get, I think, you know, to clarify what you said, that nothing in life is free, I think that's a really important concept, and we should talk about that a little bit more. If people, pet parents, just remember that dog needs to earn everything he or she wants in life with either a sit or a down and a stay. I don't think it should always be sit. I think it needs to be mixed up with a down. If the dog anticipates that all she needs to do for that treat is sit, then you might get a dog who anticipates the command and sits before you give the command. And then that's kind of not working either, because what you want to do is get the dog to obey you and not make an independent decision. Okay, I'm sitting, now give it to me. That's what we don't want. So if you want to continue with training to reinforce these submissive postures, because that's the purpose of getting the dog to sit or down, is to take all these opportunities throughout the day to practice obedience response. Then you are reaffirming each time your dominance over the dog, because you have asked it to sit or down, which are submissive postures, and you are therefore rewarding the dog for accepting your leadership, your authority, your dominance over him or her. So mix it up. Don't just do sit for everything. Do a sit and a down. Do a down and a sit. Do a sit, down, sit. Do a sit, stay, walk around, leave the room, come back in. Do the same thing with a down. Make it different each time so that the dog's not going to preempt your command. When we're talking about collars, I think that the use of choke chain is appropriate for an adult Rottweiler, maybe St. Bernard, Mastiff, maybe Great Dane, but even then, if they have a neck problem, it wouldn't be. The choke chain, I think, is a very specific tool that has its place for an adult dog with a heavy muscled neck. If the dog does not have heavy muscles, and if you're not sure, ask your veterinarian. I would not put a choke chain, for example, on a greyhound or on a puppy of any breed. I think that the better way, instead of using choke chains, which function on the basis of punishment by delivering painful pinch to the neck, I would rather see dogs trained using a reward-based system and leading their head as opposed to pinching the neck. There are collars out there that have emerged on the market in the last 10 years or so, 15 probably, called head collars. One brand would be Halti, another would be the Gentle Leader or Promise Collar. And they work by remotely making the dog's head move downward, therefore putting it into a submissive posture and leading the dog's head, much like a horse's bridle leads the horse's head. And those can be much more effective with much less physical effort. And I think those are probably the way to go for the majority of dogs.
And definitely seems like it'd be much more humane for most dogs. I wish with these head leader type of collars that they could almost have some type of a jacket that the dogs would wear, because I've seen too many people who are unaware of what these collars or head leaders are doing, thinking that, oh, this must be a mean dog because it's wearing a muzzle, not realizing, no, this is a training device.
But, you know, there's something to be said for that. I think it's okay for people to be a little cautious with dogs they don't know. I think it's important for that. I think that it's a privilege to touch my dog. It's not a right. I don't want a stranger to come barreling towards my dog thinking they can do anything they want to it. That's not normal either. I think we need to have more respect for dogs and for dogs on a leash, and particularly for dogs we don't know. So if my dog has a head collar and they don't, but if they do, I would prefer that I don't have strangers rushing up to my dog. If I need to train my dog, I need to have some boundaries. So it's not necessarily a bad thing for some people to think, ooh, that we better stay away.
It's a very good point. Children need to learn that also, that all dogs aren't cute, and cats too, that you can just run up to them and touch them. You do need to ask that permission first. Yeah. On a segue to another common concern that people have are barking dogs. And I know they are doing their job. They're warning that there's something out there, but that nuisance barking can be so problematic, especially with people living so close together. I'd love it if you could address where it comes from behaviorally and how we can address it to control it.
Okay. Well, let's talk about barking. Remember we were talking about the wolf being the ancestor of the dog. Wolves hardly bark at all. They don't really bark at all. They kind of make a little bark, but mostly they howl and they whimper and they whine. But there's no real barking the way dogs bark. Now, we think that that happened by selective breeding, by emphasizing certain vocal sounds over others, over progressive generations of different dog breeds. There are some breeds that don't bark. So the Basenji, for example, would be the best example of that. But there are a lot of dogs who bark, and bark for a lot of reasons. One study came out to say that dogs bark because they can, because it's fun. I'm not quite sure that that's the major reason the dogs bark. I think that more likely we created the barking dog from the ancestral wolf because our ancestors wanted to have the early warning system that we now can pay for in the alarm systems that we install in our homes. But way back then, we didn't have that option. So we created the barking dog, the dog that gave the alarm, that gave the alert to an intruder approaching the settlement. The barking dog at this point in our evolution, living in high population densities, has now sometimes become a liability. It can be a nuisance, as you said. We know that there are some breeds that bark more than others, namely the terrier breeds tend to bark more, but that doesn't mean that any other dog won't bark given the opportunity or the appropriate context. The most important thing to prevent a dog from barking is to get it tired. If your dog is so alert that it has boundless energy and is going to overreact to a leaf falling off a tree outside, then you haven't done your job by the dog. If you get your dog tired because it has had playtime with you and maybe other friendly dogs, or it's had a really nice long walk or a long swim and it's tired, and you leave or you sit down and watch TV, it's going to be sleeping. Why would it be barking at anything? If it does wake up to bark at something, it won't have as much energy to put into it. So chances are that it won't be as vigilant or as reactive to stimulation in the environment.
So if you want to have a good child, keep it exercised, keep it active. You want to have a good dog, make sure that you keep it exercised, active, and you've worn it out a little bit.
And if your dog barks, if your dog does bark, don't just say, no, shut up, don't do that, be quiet. Those are not effective commands. All of those are forms of verbal punishment. Stop it. No. Get off. Go away. Be quiet. They're telling the dog, I don't like what you're doing. But you're not telling the dog what you want it to do instead. And that's a missed opportunity to fix the barking. So if your dog is barking at another dog walking by the window, for example, say no or leave it and call the dog to come, heel, sit, down, stay, good dog, and then you've stopped it. It could just be a come, sit, or it could be a heel, down. But whatever you do, don't just say no, don't do that, be quiet. Tell the dog what you want it to do instead. You're never going to stop your dog from barking. Dogs bark because they can. And if it triggers them to bark, they will bark. But what you can do as a pet owner is teach the dog to stop and to do something else. You can blunt the reaction, but you're never going to make it go away. A big problem I have is with the debarking surgery. I think those are horrible and cruel and totally archaic and outdated. There is no reason for those surgeries. I think that training a dog to stop barking is one of the simplest things you can do. There are other things like citronella bark collars can be effective for many dogs. But preparing your dog to be left alone or to be less reactive, the best way to do that is to get it tired and give it quality time with you. So it's just going to rest in between.
Well, I hate to leave this subject because you've given us some marvelous information. After I had my interview with you and chatting about cats, I knew I need to have you back. And the same thing after this very short half hour of talking about dogs and their behavior and trying to understand what's going on between those ears. Dr. Stephanie Schwartz, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
And I look forward to having you back again on The Pet Doctor, where we try to give you information to be the best possible pet owner that you can be. This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Thank you very much for listening. Please tune in again next week. We'll have more information on you and your pets. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.